Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, coming up on 7 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, May the 3rd. And it's going to be a wonderful day. And it's been so far a wonderful morning. Thanks to you for helping to support Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in just a moment, we will talk with a guest who says liberalism works. We'll find out more about that coming up in just a few minutes. But first, Wisconsin Public Radio's Director of Talk Programming joins me to talk about our Spring Pledge Drive. Cheryl Gasser, we made our challenge in the last hour.
We did. Listeners did it. We made and exceeded the goal of $2,000, which means we get an additional $1,000 from Dean and Mary Gagnon. So thanks to you. If you've pledged in the last hour, you really did make a difference. And if you've pledged at all to Wisconsin Public Radio, you make a difference in what we do. But if you're not a member yet, it's a new hour. We have a new goal. $3,000 is what we want to raise by 9 o'clock this morning, and you can go to the phone 1-800-383-9772 or pledge online at WPR.org.
And you're going to want to be listening to this program, I'm sure. That's coming up. We are going to have a very renowned guest, Pulitzer Prize winning Paul Starr. He has a new book, Freedom's Power, The True Force of Liberalism. So we'll talk about what exactly is liberalism and how has liberalism served us through history, and where does it stand today? He says that conservatism is in shambles and liberals have a new opportunity right now, but what do they stand for? We'll look forward to your thoughts as well on what it means to be a liberal coming up as we talk with our guests. But right now, we hope that you will show your appreciation for great guests and interesting topics and help pay for the programs that you listen to every day by calling 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772, or pledge online any amount, WPR.org.
You depend on Wisconsin Public Radio and on Joy's show to keep you educated and informed on the news of the day, the news in politics, and we depend on you. Listeners are over 30% of our budget, and we couldn't do it without you. We're your companion every morning. Maybe you listen throughout the day. You listen to BBC overnight. You listen on the weekends for some lighter fare and some music. Whatever the case may be, the amount is up to you. The important thing is that you become a member. Become a member now during this first day of our May Pledge Drive. We want it to be as short as possible as well. Enjoy the drive. We'll end soon.
Well, we hope as soon as possible. Though whenever we make the goal, the overall goal for the pledge drive, which at the start of it was $275,000. As soon as we reach that goal, the pledge drive ends, and we're back to full hours of discussion, and you won't hear Cheryl and I asking you for your support as soon as we reach that goal. The goal is important. This is an important pledge drive. It's the last pledge drive of our fiscal year. It's the last time during our budget cycle here that we will come to you and ask for your support. It's important because we need to balance the books, and listener support is very important in balancing those books. 1-800-383-9772. Pledge any amount, and it helps pay for the programming that you hear every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. Help us reach our $3,000 goal for this hour to keep us on track and to end this drive as soon as possible.
1-800-383-9772. Making a pledge is quick and easy. Volunteers ready to take your call. It takes 3 or 4 minutes. We ask for some personal information that we keep personal. We ask you how much you'd like to contribute and how you want to pay for it. Again, all of that is up to you. The volunteer can walk you through it. It is quick and easy. If you prefer, you can pledge online where it's safe and secure at WPR.org. But either way, we want to hear from you during this hour. Our goal, $3,000. If you're a fan, especially of the political coverage that Joy brings to you during the week, we would love to hear from you during this hour.
We hear from guests who are liberals. We hear from guests who are conservatives. We hear from guests from all sides of the political spectrum. We seek out those viewpoints from all over the political spectrum because we know you appreciate hearing more than one point of view. You want to be well-rounded, well-informed on all sides of arguments, and that's why we look for the very best guests to talk with you about the current issues of the day. 1-800-383-9772. Your pledge of any amount will help pay for the program. Any amount makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. But if you'd like the member benefit card, which is the benefit card that we've been offering over the past several pledge drives, that's yours for $10 a month or more. A $120 pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, and you'll have this card and 2-for-1 entrees at a bunch of restaurants around Wisconsin and some cultural events, admission, 2-for-1 admissions, lots of nice things with this member benefit card. Yours for a pledge of $10 a month or more. 1-800-383-9772.
And if you eat out once or twice a month, the member benefit card really can pay for your pledge. So it's almost like getting a chance to support Wisconsin Public Radio for free, getting the member benefit card as well. And if you break it down, $120 a year, $10 a month, 33 cents a day. Is Wisconsin Public Radio worth 33 cents a day to you? Again, any amount's welcome. You decide. Go to the phone, 1-800-383-9772, WPR.org. Wisconsin Public Radio gives you a chance to talk with lawmakers, experts, and authors on a variety of issues. And we're coming to you now to ask for your financial support to help keep programming like this going strong.
1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Thank you. If you've already called in your pledge this drive or a past drive, if you're an ongoing member of Wisconsin Public Radio, perhaps you renew through the mail or through electronics funds transfer or monthly installments. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Right now, though, what about you? Are you someone who's been listening for a while but never thought that you would call in a pledge or that we were talking to you when we asked for a contribution? Well, we are. 1-800-383-9772. It's always great to get new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. Cheryl, I was just noticing in our last hour, not quite half, but almost half of the callers. We had 31 people call in pledges in our last hour, and 12 of them were brand new members. Isn't
that
wonderful?
Terrific. Wonderful.
So nearly half, and that means that someone who never called in a pledge before decided to call in a pledge. Is that you? 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
And you are the most important source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio. We rely on your contributions, and that's why we come to ask you a few times a year for your pledge of support. 1-800-383-9772, WPR.org. You can pledge online. Again, either way, it's quick and easy, and you'll have gone on your way. Becoming a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, you really will feel better at the end of the drive. And why not do it now so you can feel good all drive?
Yeah, you know, $300 raised toward that $3,000 goal, a nice start, but we could still use your pledge at 1-800-383-9772. Cheryl, we'll talk to you a little bit later, okay? And let me now welcome in our guest who has been waiting patiently to talk with you. And let me give you a different number if you would like to talk with him. Our call-in number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're going to talk this hour about liberalism. That's right, liberalism. We'll find out exactly what that means. What does it mean to be a liberal? Wonder if you consider yourself a liberal. Maybe you prefer progressive. Talking about liberalism, our guest says liberalism works. And that right now liberals have a new opportunity. And we will talk with him about that. He is Paul Starr, a professor of sociology and public affairs at Princeton University and its Woodrow Wilson School of Public Affairs. He is the co-founder and editor of The American Prospect. He is the author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning The Social Transformation of American Medicine and The Creation of the Media. His latest book is Freedom's Power, The True Force of Liberalism. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you.
Thank you so much for being with us. What is liberalism?
At the core of liberalism is the idea that that each of us has an equal right to freedom. Now, that's been understood, I think, in a steadily more expansive way over time. So that if we, you know, go back to classical liberalism, or what I refer to in this book as constitutional liberalism of the 18th century, that lies at the founding of the American Republic. The central idea there was that we have an equal right to freedom from arbitrary power, an equal equality before the law. That was true at a point when classical liberals were not really democratic, when, for example, voting rights were not extended to women, to blacks, to men without poverty. Liberalism developed in the 19th century, became more democratic in both England and America. The franchise expanded. And so an equal right to freedom came to include an equal right to a share in the government, an equal right to political liberty. And then in the 20th century, liberalism extended still further with the idea that we all have an equal right to certain basic requirements of human development, such as education, and to a minimum standard of security that would be necessary for preserving personal dignity and equal opportunity. And so I think in that way, liberalism has expanded. But the key thing for me in this book is the idea that liberalism isn't just a matter of fine aspirations. It's really proved to be a practical strategy for creating the power and the wealth that make freedom and justice realistic possibilities.
So if I would have asked maybe some conservative leaning guest what is liberalism, I would have gotten a very different answer, wouldn't I? I would have got what you did, you know, I would have heard tax and spend and big government.
Well, you certainly might have. What I argue in this book is that American liberalism and American conservatism do share a certain amount of the same common tradition, that tradition of constitutional liberalism. We interpret it very differently, but there's a common point of origin in certain ideas about constitutional government and individual rights. We've just taken those in somewhat different directions, and of course, right now, things are very polarized in America politically, but I don't think that should obscure the fact that there is some common tradition that lies behind both sides.
Yeah. So then, what is conservatism then? Is it it also says that it's an equal right to freedom?
Well, I think there are very different elements within conservatism. There has always been, and this goes, you know, back to the 18th and 19th centuries, there's been a social conservatism that has defended hierarchical relations in society, within the family, within society in general. There is another kind of conservatism, more the free market conservatism, which is very much descended from the classical economic liberalism, the laissez-faire liberalism of the 19th century. In the development of modern liberalism, the shift was this. Modern liberals have held on to the constitutional principles, the principles, for example, that are in the Bill of Rights. Modern liberals believe in those very, very strongly. But what modern liberals rejected of the classical liberal tradition was the idea of laissez-faire, of a minimal government that left people in poverty and economic inequality and so forth. Liberals turned against that and have favored a broader role for government in correcting those problems and in making freedom more of a reality for people instead of just a formal legal principle.
Yeah. What's the difference between a liberal and a progressive?
Well, I use those words interchangeably. I don't think it's helpful to, you know, there are some people these days who want to call themselves progressives. because they're afraid of the associations that or the taint that the word liberal has acquired. I don't think it helps to try to run away from the word. This is the American political vocabulary, liberal and conservative. And if you don't want to own up to it, people, I think, are concerned that that there's something dishonest going on. So I don't want to make a big fuss around about the word. I don't really care whether a politician calls himself a liberal as long as he acts like one.
Who is a politician who is a liberal?
Oh, well, I think, from my point of view, most of the Democrats, in fact, all of the major Democratic candidates for president are liberals by my definition. I used to work for Hillary Clinton once upon a time in the early Clinton administration. Some people think she's the most conservative now by comparison with Barack Obama and John Edwards. Well, she's certainly a liberal by my standards.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that there are many that are even farther on to the left on the political spectrum,
sure,
who think that she is far too right on that,
uh-huh,
on that spectrum.
Uh-huh.
But they're all liberals.
Well, this book, Freedom's Power, is about matters of general political principle. And there are many differences under those principles, different views of particular policies, particular reactions to developments in the world. I think you can still be a liberal and have different opinions about many of those things.
Yeah. Why, in a piece in the American Prospect, do you say conservatism is in shambles right now?
Well, I think although there are some conservatives now who are saying that the Bush administration is not really conservative, I think the Bush administration gave the conservative movement exactly what it wanted, and it has been a disaster. It has been a disaster in Iraq. This was a war that conservatives overwhelmingly approved. It was, I think, a mistake from the beginning. It has not advanced American interest in any sense. In fact, it's dissipated American power. Strategically, it's been a fiasco. And morally, it's been a disaster. It's antagonized people throughout the world. We, in the wake of 9/11, we enjoyed the benefit of tremendous goodwill. We could have organized that and created new, stronger alliances to resist terrorism, and we did just the opposite. I think we just dissipated a tremendous national opportunity. I think you just look at the public opinion. It's turned against the Republicans. It's turned against the conservatives. I'm not saying that this is clearly, at this point, a liberal victory. It's just a moment of opportunity for liberals to make their case.
Yeah.
And then besides the Iraq War, I don't want to just limit it to that. I think conservatism has defaulted on many of the great long-run problems facing this country, problems of the global environment, problems of energy, problems of growing income inequality, problems of long-term fiscal imbalance in the federal government. Conservative government has utterly failed to address these problems. It's left them, I think, for a new administration to fix.
We're talking with Paul Starr. He is a professor of sociology and public affairs at Princeton University. He is author of Freedom's Power, The True Force of Liberalism, in which he says, among other things, that liberalism is the only viable response to the political and economic challenges of the modern world. That liberals now have an opportunity for solving the mess that conservatives will leave behind. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. What do you think? What questions do you have? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Thursday, May the 3rd. A reminder that we are in our spring pledge drive. It's morning number one. And the number to call to make a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, 1-800-383-9772. We have raised so far about $600 toward a $3,000 goal. Thank you. But please do contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio if you can, 1-800-383-9772. If you would like to talk with our guest about what liberalism is all about and why he thinks liberalism works and that liberalism is the answer to many of our problems, we welcome your call to our call-in number, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our guest is Paul Starr. He's a professor of sociology and public affairs at Princeton University. His latest book is Freedom's Power, The True Force of Liberalism. And let me go right to the phone, since our time is short with you. Ralph in Green Bay is with us first. Hi, Ralph. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to respond to, I didn't hear the whole program, but the last comment regarding the liberals being the ones that are going to solve the Iraq war and the conservatives, the ones that got us into it, and then including almost all the Democrats as liberals. In my recollection is that nearly all the so-called Democratic liberals voted for that war other than Russ Feingold, and a lot of them are still supporting that war. So I think that they're liberals when the opportunity is there, but I would call them more opportunist than liberals.
Now, Professor Starr?
Well, I think when you say they voted for that war, you have to go back to the circumstances of that vote in Congress. You have to ask yourself, would, let's say Al Gore had become president instead of George Bush, would we have had the war in Iraq? I don't think so. I think everything that Gore has said in recent years indicates that that wouldn't have happened if we had had a Democratic president. And other than Gore, I think also it wouldn't have happened. I think this was the result of a certain frame of mind that was typical of not just Republicans, but of a certain strain of hard right, really radical conservatives. Dick Cheney and George Bush have been the ones to put these policies into effect. That vote in Congress, going back to, what was it, 2002 or 2003, you have to remember that at that point, the administration was saying that it wanted to go to the United Nations, and it needed to have the authority to go to war in order to be able to negotiate effectively. And they used that device very cleverly to put Democrats in an impossible position. I've opposed the war from the beginning. I thought Democrats should have voted no at the time. But I understood why a lot of them reluctantly had to, I don't know if they had to, but they decided to do it and came to regret their votes.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton keeps on getting hounded from those who want her, apparently, to apologize for her vote. She says she takes responsibility for it, but what do you make of that flap over whether she should apologize for her vote or not?
Well, I also understand why a politician doesn't want to be put into a defensive position apologizing for their past actions. And I think... I wish he had just said it was a mistake, straightforwardly. That would have been, to have cleared the air. But right now, they have to think, and I think actually the whole country has to think, about what can be done to extricate ourselves from Iraq. It's not a simple problem.
Yeah, how would liberalism guide the Democrats in Congress right now after President Bush's veto of that war funding bill with the timetable?
I think there's a problem here. I don't think that liberal principles in general give us a specific line of action about every particular problem. Because what's required besides general principles of fairness and justice and so forth, what's also required is judgment. Judgment about what the realities are on the ground. So, for example, in the case of Iraq, as a general matter of principle, I would have preferred to see Saddam Hussein removed. But in 2002 and 2003, when I was writing about this for the American Prospect, it seemed to me that if we went to war in Iraq, we would, in practice, cause many worse things than good things, even though I didn't think Saddam Hussein was a just leader and the world would be better off without him. So what's required is not just principle. What's required is an assessment of reality, of what the practical effects of action are going to be. And I think the same thing has to be the frame that we look at extricating ourselves from Iraq, because we have to think about what are the real effects going to be. So from my point of view, what we don't want to do is to strengthen al-Qaeda. On the other hand, there are many groups within Iraq who have opposed the U.S. presence, who are also opposed to al-Qaeda. We should be focused on negotiating our way out, bringing in the surrounding countries into those negotiations, and trying to get out of Iraq, but in such a way that we keep al-Qaeda under control.
We'll go next to Kathy in Watertown. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and I am enjoying your guest very much. Thank you. In regards to liberalism, I really appreciate the discussion on this, and I do think that Hillary Clinton is, you know, absolutely a liberal. You know, in her book, It Takes a Village, she very much expresses, you know, what I think a liberal is. And you, sir, would you be thinking Hillary would have what was needed to lead the country in 2008? And where are you throwing your support? Have you made any decisions?
No, I haven't. And this book that I've written, Freedom is Power, is really, it's not about the next election. I hope it has some durability and people find that valuable no matter which way the election turns out. And I'm really not going around talking about my book so as to endorse a candidate. My personal view is I'd like to see a Democrat win in 2008, support whichever candidate that is when it comes to the primary here in my state. I will vote for whichever of those candidates, Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, I think has the greatest likelihood of winning the general election. So for me, the slight differences that may emerge between them in the campaign, or let's also include John Edwards in this, I don't think those are all that significant. I know that in the course of a campaign, politicians position themselves in ways that seem, you know, likely to win them the election. I don't actually make all that much of it. I've been involved in some campaigns and advising candidates, and frankly, this is not what matters to me in the long run. What matters to me are really the commitments that they've demonstrated over their whole lives.
Thanks, Kathy. Dan in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
My question is, what's the difference between liberals and libertarians?
Oh, well, there's a big difference between liberals and libertarians, although we agree, I think, about some things. Now, libertarian can mean civil libertarian or economic libertarian. And most liberals are civil libertarians. They believe in a strong defense of constitutional liberties under the Bill of Rights. The big difference has to do with property rights, has to do with the interpretation of economic freedom. And on that score, many libertarians are opposed to various kinds of government regulation, labor laws, environmental regulation, Social Security, and so forth. And that is where we disagree, because I think those forms of government activity advance the public good, advance our interests in freedom, and libertarians disagree on that.
Thank you, Dan. George in Whitewater is with us next. Hi, George.
Hi, and thank you very much for taking my call. I would like to ask, there is going to be, struggles for resources. We're going to be entering, or we are entering global economies. How can, this liberal viewpoint, we're going to have to be dealing with the entire world soon, how can this liberal viewpoint be sort of spread, and what would your guests say to this?
Well, you know, actually, if we look over the past half century or more, the collapse of first of fascism and then of communism and the advance of liberal democracy in many parts of the world, in Europe, in the former Soviet bloc, and in East Asia, all of this to me is very, very encouraging. There is, I think, some reason to believe that liberal democracies are more likely to settle their problems peacefully, including some of the problems that you're talking about resources. They're much more likely to settle their problems peacefully than are authoritarian governments, which are historically just much more likely to go to war. And so we have some reason, I think, for confidence that these developments are actually going in a positive direction. That's not to say there's any guarantee that this will continue, but I actually take heart from recent history.
Thank you very much, George, for the war, the call. Do Professor Starr, liberals want to redistribute wealth, take from the rich and give to the poor?
Well, I would say that right now there is a very considerable redistribution of wealth going on. It's a redistribution upward. If you look at what's been happening to the distribution of income and wealth in recent years, the gains in the American economy have been flowing overwhelmingly to the top. In fact, we have some recent data about 2005. This was from the Internal Revenue Service, where the total income reported to the Internal Revenue Service increased by 9%. But all of those gains went to the top tenth of the population. And, in fact, the bottom 90% saw the total income that they receive decline by 0.6%. Now, that's a redistribution of wealth. What we need instead is a policy of shared prosperity, a policy that allows all of us to benefit from the gains to the economy. And there really is a difference in different political parties. One of the things that I point out in my book is if you go back to the late 1940s and look over roughly the half century since then, what we find is that during every Republican administration, there has been an increase in the inequality of income in the United States, and under all but one of the Democratic administrations, the only exception being Jimmy Carter's, income inequality was reduced. People's incomes became more equal, and they did because under the Democrats, on average, unemployment was 30% lower, growth in the economy was 30% higher. The result is labor markets were tighter, and wages rose for people at the bottom and in the middle, and that tended to close the differences between the rich and the poor. These things really matter. I mean, right now, the issue of an increase in the minimum wage is a very good concrete illustration of what a difference policy makes. So, you know, when you put it that way, do liberals favor a redistribution of wealth? What liberals favor is a policy of growth with fairness, a policy that gets the economy to grow but enables everybody to share in that growth.
Yeah. And why do you say liberalism is the better response to the world's, to the country's political and economic problems? Why is liberalism better than conservatism?
Well, the whole host of reasons. First of all, I mean, just to go back to shared prosperity, I think that fits in with the basic American promise that each of us will enjoy a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's not a matter of taking from the rich to give to the poor, but it's a matter of creating the conditions which enable everybody to participate, to contribute. Think of the groups that historically have been stigmatized and excluded, who have been increasingly brought into the circle of prosperity through policies that extended education, extended civil rights. I mean, this is a great tradition that has helped America realize its fundamental ideals. And then, so far as foreign policy is concerned, I think what liberalism has stood for from the days first of Woodrow Wilson, but then more particularly from Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman on, has been a policy of internationalism that has called for the United States to work cooperatively with other countries, particularly other countries that share our values, other liberal democracies, and to create a force in international affairs that helps to protect American interests as well as the interests of other countries. I mean, that has been an immensely successful tradition, liberal internationalism. So the two things could go together.
Vincent in Oshkosh, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have to take exception with many of the points that are being made here. I think the data shows that this president has been an excellent steward of the economy, and his policies of cutting taxes have spurred very good growth in terms of jobs. And no, they're not all burger-flipping jobs. Also, you look at the Dow hitting record highs. We've got an investor class that is probably over 50% of the population now that has enjoyed the fruits of that success, the increase in stock markets and the run-up. And I think that liberalism at its core, when you talk about redistributing wealth, accomplishes this through a policy of penalizing those that work hard and are successful by a punitive taxation system. And I think that actually takes freedom away from people who are hardworking and successful people, as opposed to guaranteeing them freedom. I always find it interesting that liberals talk about the Bill of Rights and freedom, but the only selectively. In other words, we've got a governor here who's very liberal, who does not support the Second Amendment. In fact, we're one of only two states that does not allow conceal and carry. So when you talk about freedom and you try to impugn the tax or the fiscal policy of this president, I think you ignore some very important facts.
Well, there's a whole bunch of things to respond to there. First of all, as to the success economically of this administration, unfortunately, the median income, the income of the average household in America, has been falling under this administration. So, yes, there have been gains, and there have certainly been gains to the stock market. But unfortunately, the majority of Americans aren't seeing those gains. Those gains are flowing to the top. That's what's been missing. That's why, in spite of the fact that the Dow may be hitting record highs, the president's approval has been sunk so low. Why is it that the administration has been meeting such hostility? It's not just because of Iraq. It's because people don't feel that their well-being is really improving. Now, as for liberalism penalizing the successful, first of all, the stock market went up under the Clinton administration too. We had tremendous growth. If you go back historically, conservatives hated Franklin Roosevelt. But Roosevelt saved capitalism. The reforms that liberals have introduced have made it possible for there to be an economy with individual initiative and technological innovation and high rates of growth. And the record is just there that actually the growth rates have been higher under Democrats than under Republicans. And I think that's partly because of this commitment to shared prosperity, to including more people, and to enabling them to contribute.
And what about why don't liberals want me to carry a concealed weapon?
Every other liberal democracy in the world, pretty much, even Australia now, there are limitations on the purchase of weapons. I mean, I think we're not going to see a shift in that direction in the United States. Because in practice, look, there are tens of millions, I think now hundreds of millions of guns in private ownership, and it's, as a practical matter, I think most Democrats have realized this is not an area where we're going to be able to move policy. In fact, public opinion has long been in favor of a stronger regulation of gun ownership, but it's not a cause that I put particularly high.
Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Troy.
Paul Starr, professor of sociology and public affairs at Princeton University and its Woodrow Wilson School of Public Affairs. He is the author of Freedom's Power, The True Force of Liberalism. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 11 minutes before 9 o'clock. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is coming up after 9. She'll be welcoming in media critic Bob McChesney. That's coming up after 9. I'm welcoming in Wisconsin Public Radio's Assistant Talk Director, Cheryl Gasser. Cheryl, good morning again.
Good morning, Joy. How are we doing?
We're doing quite well. $1,780 raised toward a $3,000 goal this hour. So thank you to all the listeners who have called in a pledge so far this hour. But what about you? We're not at that $3,000 goal yet and won't be unless you go to the phone and call 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772, or WPR.org.
And look at that. We've heard from 8 members this hour, 5 of them new members, and that is wonderful. We want to grow the Wisconsin Public Radio family with new members, keep the existing members. So thank you, whether you're new or renewing. But if you haven't made a pledge yet, please go to the phone now. WPR.org is another way to pledge. The number to call, 800-383-9772. Take a minute and think about some of the topics that you hear throughout the week on Joy's show. We've covered things like climate change and election reform, gun control, a variety of angles on the war in Iraq. What is that kind of programming, those kind of topics worth to you and the kind of guests that Joy brings to you each weekday morning? Put a number on it and make your pledge now.
I know I learn something new every day doing this program, just reading the material that my great producers provide me each day. The books from these wonderful guests like Paul Starr, who Pulitzer Prize winning author, who joined us to talk about why he thinks liberalism works. I learn something new every day. I hope you do too. You listen to this program, you value this service. Please help pay for it at 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Please help us get to this $3,000 goal that we have for this hour. The quicker we make these hourly goals, the quicker this pledge drive will be over. We end the goal, the pledge drive as soon as we meet the overall goal.
1-800-383-9772. When you call that number, it'll take you just 3 or 4 minutes. You talk with a friendly volunteer. You tell them who you are, how much you'd like to contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, and how you want to pay for it. You can put it on a credit card. We can set up an electronic funds transfer. You can write us a check and send it in the mail. You can pay all at once. You can pay quarterly, pay monthly. We make it as easy as possible. The decision, though, is up to you to become a member. That's the most important thing. Any level, welcome. But please, go to the phone now. Go to your web. WPR.org is our website. You can pledge there, safe and secure online. But our goal, again, $3,000 this hour.
One of the things I love about this program and all of our call-in shows on Wisconsin Public Radio, Cheryl, are the exchange of ideas that you hear. You may not be someone who calls into a radio program, but isn't it interesting to hear from listeners all over the state of Wisconsin and to hear different viewpoints, not only from our many, many great guests, but from our very, very smart callers as well. Just in this last hour, we did hear from people who were, I guess, on the liberal side of the political spectrum, agreeing with our guest, and we heard from guests on the conservative side of the political spectrum disagreeing with the guest and challenging the guest. And it's a program that makes you think. Now, I think that you should go to the phone and call 1-800-383-9772 because you, too, enjoy the exchange of ideas that you hear on the Ideas Network. Make a pledge of any amount. Any amount makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio and makes you a part of the Wisconsin Public Radio family. A pledge of $10 a month or more, and we have the member benefit card to send you.
The member benefit card entitles you to two-for-one benefits throughout Wisconsin. 259 restaurants participating, getting two-for-one entrees, 49 performances and attractions, two-for-one admissions to things like museums and symphonies, also discounts for online stores. Our way of saying thank you for being a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, again at the level $10 a month or more, to 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
Cheryl, we are right now at $1,780, the same amount that we were at 5 minutes ago. We only have about five more minutes left in the hour, so time is running short in this hour, and we're not quite at that goal. So remember that it's important that we reach these hourly goals, and the sooner we make the hourly goals, the sooner the overall goal of the pledge drive will be met. That is, by the way, $275,000. And once we raise that amount of money and listener support, the pledge drive ends. We pull the plug on the pledge drive and back to full hour discussions for you. So an incentive for you to go to the phone now instead of later. 1-800-383-9772.
And we'll make this goal call by call. Your call will make a difference. Your pledge will make a difference at any amount. We couldn't do it without you. It really is a team effort. And the conversation we had just now, Joy, with Paul Starr and liberalism, you talked with Tom DeLay not too long ago about the conservative movement and the need to save that. You've also talked with Bill Bradley and Charlie Rangel, John Leo, Greg Palast, Ali Alawi, the big names. And our listeners get a chance not only to hear from them and hear you talk with them, but to take part in the discussion. And it's such a unique service. Wisconsin Public Radio is truly a gem among public radio services, and we're lucky to work for Wisconsin Public Radio. We're lucky to be listeners, and so are you. Wouldn't you want to support a program like that, support a station like this? 1-800-383-9772. Make your pledge now.
And I am lucky to have listeners like you who contribute to this program, not only financially, but every day by listening and by calling in. You really are amazing. I hope that you will continue to support this service, that you will call in your pledge of any amount or go online at WPR.org or 1-800-383-9772 and make that pledge. You decide how much. We do get pledges of $50 a year to $5,000 a year. Whatever the amount in between there is one that's right for you. You decide. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
If there were 10 listeners who wanted to pledge at the $120 level, which again is the average pledge for Wisconsin Public Radio, it gets you the member benefit card, good for two-for-one benefits, including dining and admission to arts and cultural events around the state, we would make our goal of $3,000. If there's just 10 of you out there, if you've already become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, thanks for your support. But if not, now is a great time. Just a few minutes left this hour. We made our goal at 6. We made our goal at 7.
Yeah.
And we really want to make it a goal this hour. $3,000 to raise in just a few minutes to do it.
We did get a call earlier, a pledge earlier this morning from Samuel in Clinton, who says that he is someone who listens in the wee hours of the morning from 3 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock in the morning, listening to the BBC overnight. So thank you very much for calling in your pledge, Samuel. He's a night owl. Maybe maybe his work or sleep patterns have him listen. Listening that. That's right. You can call in now, no matter what your favorite program is. This is when you're listening right now. This is when you have the radio on. You're near the phone. Why not make the pledge now? The sooner we reach our goal, the sooner the pledge drive is over. There are no special thank you gifts like books and CDs and coffee mugs, just the member benefit card at the $120 level. So don't wait for some great book to come along. It's not this drive. All of your contributions are going to the programming. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
Just think for a minute, Joy. If everyone who's going to pledge during this entire drive pledged this hour to this show, it'd be over in a matter of minutes. Of course, that's not going to happen. But the more people we hear from during this hour, the sooner the drive will be over. 1-800-383-9772 is the number to call. Because we keep you up to date on issues in the news, because you count on Joy for information and staying up to date at politics, health, media, a variety of topics. Make your pledge now. Help keep Wisconsin Public Radio going strong. Our goal, $3,000 in just a few minutes to go.
We have $710 to go, so we are almost there. Your pledge could put us over the goal. Help us reach that goal and stay on track. Thank you so much if you've called in your pledge. Now it's your turn. There's time for you and a line for you at 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772, or WPR.org. We only have 30 seconds to go for us to ask you to make that pledge, but you can make that pledge as the newscast is on.
You listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on Joy each weekday morning. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported, and we need to hear from you now. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
Pledge any amount, pledge for whatever reason, but because you know that we couldn't do this without listener contributions from listeners like you. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. And thanks.